Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Denton joins us every Thursday to talk some college football, though I did see you retweeted like these game picks for Monday night. And I'm asking you this question. You got a kick out of somebody predicting that the Bears would win 73-0. Do you know what the significance of 73-0 is?
Oh, come on, Kevin. I know I'm young, but I'm a student of the game. That was the joke. That's a, like, if you're young, you
all right.
You don't
I
understand.
Couldn't tell if in your retweet if you knew it or not. I assumed you did because you are a student of the game, but I thought there was a chance that you just thought it was funny that the guy predicted some crazy score.
No. I know okay. That significance, and it's funny. There's the one, if you follow those game picks, which I don't know that you do because it's more of a social media thing than anything,
yeah.
But there's the one guy, Adam Rank, that is he's a diehard Bears fan, and he always picks against the Commanders. And it was also, I think it's funny that he is probably walking around furious that he did not come up with a joke of them beating us 73-0.
Got it. All right. Denton joins us every Thursday in this spot. And Denton, not only does he do a college football show on Sirius XM, College Football Overtime, which he's excellent at doing, he is the host of the Washington Commanders pre- and post-game coverage on this station and on 106.7 The Fan. All right. Let's talk some college football. I want to go back to last week. Do you think that Penn State and Florida State are completely done?
Not completely done, but they're in a whole lot of hurt right now. I think they have eliminated any possibility of them controlling their own respective destinies, and they need a lot of things to happen to help them get into the 12. Now, Penn State's in a better spot because if you look at their schedule, they have a lot more opportunities for good quality wins. You know, they get to play Ohio State. So if they beat Ohio State, you look at them a little differently. Now, would I expect Penn State to beat Ohio State? No, I would not. But they have more opportunities than Florida State does. You know, Florida State needs the ACC to crumble if they're going to get in because UVA is pretty good and they have the head-to-head victory. Georgia Tech's pretty good. Miami is really, really good. So I don't know if Florida State, they didn't do themselves any favors as much as Mario Cristobal tried to help them out at the end of the game.
Is James Franklin dead man walking?
No, I don't think so. I think Penn State, the people in charge of the money and the boosters are hopefully smart enough to realize that if you do fire James Franklin, it'll give you momentary joy because, yes, we are finally done with James Franklin. But you have to then get the next guy right. And if you don't get the next guy right, you become what Nebraska has been. You become what Florida has been since Urban Meyer left. It's really not as cut and dry as, well, we're just going to hire somebody and they're going to be awesome immediately. So I think they need to think long and hard about it. I don't think you can just make a crash decision because you lost to a really bad team in UCLA. It's a lot. There's a lot more factors that go into that. And unless you can get someone that you feel confident is a surefire thing, like maybe a Kurt Cignetti, I don't know that you would fire James Franklin.
Those are two interesting comps to go to Nebraska and to Florida as comps for Penn State. I think that is a... In both men's basketball and in football, sometimes fan bases just want that immediate satisfaction. And by the way, sometimes it's the right move, especially when it has sort of run its course. And personally, right. I believe James Franklin, it's run its course. But it doesn't mean that there's not a great risk on the other side. And in today's, you know, landscape of salary cap and NIL and the ability, like Texas Tech did this year, to buy a team, it's more competitive out there. And you could fall by the wayside for a few years and yearn for the days in which you lost a close game to Oregon and then lost at UCLA as the number seven team in America. It's true. Did you feel the same way about Vanderbilt that I felt, which is I'm more impressed with them as a team in a 30-14 loss than I was even before that game?
Maybe a little bit. You know, I knew that Alabama was going to win that one. I didn't know they were going to win by as much as they did, but I was jumping around in my living room.
Well, that was a lucky cover, obviously. Yeah.
Thank God for it, though, because it had your boy going 4-1 last week. I think Vanderbilt is good, though. You know, offensively, it is all about Diego Pavia, but in, you know, the SEC is really weird this year, Kevin, because there's not a lot of great offensive lines. You know, Texas's offensive line isn't very good, where traditionally they are. LSU's offensive line is terrible, and traditionally they're pretty good. But I think Vanderbilt is one of the better offensive lines in the SEC. So that, to me, is what was really, really impressive. Alabama is more talented than they are, but Vanderbilt has—they got some dog in them, and it's more than just the quarterback this year. Whereas last year was all about Pavia, they've built a culture there to where they're going to be a tough out or a tough game in the months of November and December for some of these SEC teams. And I mean, who knows? Maybe they stumble their way as a two loss, or maybe the first three loss team that gets into the playoff.
Do you think Florida is much better than their 2-3 record indicates?
Definitely. If they didn't lose to South Florida, you look at them with a completely different eye. And now they did lose, so you have to factor that into your equation of them. But if they didn't lose that game, they're 3-2 with losses to good teams. Whereas now they're 2-3 with losses. Even, I mean, South Florida is still a good team. I mean, they're ranked once again. They fell out briefly when they lost to Miami, which is what happens when you're a group of five team, but they're now back in the rankings. So really they've lost to three ranked teams and three pretty good teams and three teams that might end up or should end up in the college football playoff. I think they're a lot better. Their schedule is disastrous. I mean, anyone who was intelligent took Florida at the very least on the points. Last weekend, I took them straight up on the money line because I just felt like they were a much better team than their record showed, and the Arch thing is still getting figured out.
So what is the Arch thing? Is it going to get figured out? I mean, he's gone from, you know, a Heisman Trophy favorite to a guy that's being talked about as a day three pick eventually, best case.
Yeah, he's fine.
And not in the upcoming draft. I mean,
there's
talk about
him
perhaps not even being back at Texas next year. So what's going on there?
I'd be curious to see what happens next year if he stays in college, which I am expecting him to stay in college. Look, I think he's fine, but he hasn't played before. You know, he's still very much in what would be considered your... You know, we do this all the time with the NFL, where if you only play 12 games 1 year and you go 4 games in before you're done with your rookie year, right? Because you got to play a 16 or 17. That's kind of where he's at. I mean, he's played like 7 games, 8 games now in college football. Like, it's really not a lot. I think he'll be okay. There was just too much pressure on him at the beginning of the year. And that's not his fault entirely, but that just kind of comes with the territory of having the last name Manning. And then, you know, some of the business moves, he knows, right? Like, that whole family understands what he is, and they used it to their advantage to get some money. But he's a fine quarterback with expectations of being an absolute world beater. And I think that was unfair I mean, if you bet him to win the Heisman at the beginning of the year, that's on you. No one else. You never bet the Heisman front runner. I mean, you know this. I know this. You never bet the front runner, a preseason Heisman favorite. I just think there was too much pressure on him. And again, the offensive line isn't helping because at times he's running for his life. And that's really difficult when you're getting accustomed to playing in the SEC. It's really good teams and your offensive line isn't protecting you.
Yeah, you know what's interesting in watching him, though? Like, the Manning pedigree and the Manning, you know, football IQ, and there are many games I watch, I'm like, dude, you've got to throw the football. Like, at the end of the Florida game, the ball's got to leave his hand on that final play of the game. And he just seems to be oblivious to some of that stuff.
He's timid.
Yeah,
he still has the yips a little bit. I think he's gotten over it a bit. But in like in the Ohio State game, it was very, very obvious. And then in some of the lower level games, you're just like, God, you're supposed to be slicing and dicing these teams up. But then you have instances like in that Florida game, that third quarter touchdown pass where he like perfectly climbs the pocket. He's running forward and delivers a pass on the money in the back of the end zone. Like, that's a beautiful throw. So you see these points where you're like, all right, this is why people really thought highly of him. But then you see, as you mentioned, there's a lot more bad right now than there is good.
All right, I want to focus on one team that's quasi-local, and that is UVA, because I actually was listening to you either last weekend or maybe it was after the Florida State win, and you were looking ahead at their schedule with the guy that you were doing the show with on Sirius XM, and I went and looked at it, and I'm like, oh my God, if Virginia beats Louisville, they're going to be in the ACC championship game. They're going to be one win away in the ACC title game, away from a playoff berth. So tell everybody what the opportunity for Virginia is as a 5-1 team, 3-0 in the ACC, tied for first.
Yeah, that win against Florida State put them in a position that they certainly did not anticipate to be in. And I think they beat Louisville, and now you get Washington State. You get North Carolina, California, Wake Forest, Duke, Virginia Tech. I can't think of a better group of teams to play.
Duke's the game, and Cal's pretty good at home, but Duke could be. Duke is 3-0 in the ACC.
Yeah, and that'll be on the road. But I mean, it's not like Duke has this massive, crazy home crowd in football and basketball. Yes, in football, no. So that'll be that one game where you circle and say, "All right, this is deep," and that's where you're going to start to feel a little bit of the pressure, because at that point, we'll be weeks into the college football playoff rankings, and UVA will be, assuming they win up to that point, they're going to be not just in those rankings; they're going to be pretty high in those rankings, and they're going to start to hear that chatter. And as much as coaches say we don't listen to it, you absolutely do. But they're in a position now to where, like North Carolina, I already know Belichick's going to be coaching by then, with like this rumor of him looking for a buyout already. Cal has been a pretty good team, and you do have to travel for that one. The ACC traveling across the country is still a little weird for teams, but they're now in a position with Chandler Morris, and he is really the driving force here. They're in position to make the college football playoff. I do think two ACC teams get in, so as long as they get to the ACC championship game, which they might need a Georgia Tech loss somewhere along the way.
Let me interrupt you for a second, because that's what I was going to lead to, and we'll have plenty of time to sort this out, and it may not need to be sorted out, because it usually doesn't, but Virginia, Duke, Georgia Tech, and Miami are four teams at the top of the ACC. They're all undefeated. I'm not even counting SMU. And there's very little head-to-head. Like, Miami doesn't play any of the other three. Virginia and Duke play, but Georgia Tech only plays one of the other three. There is the possibility of multiple undefeated teams, more than two, at the top of the ACC. I don't know what the tiebreakers are for the ACC championship game and who would qualify, but it's an interesting situation to keep an eye on when you look at the schedules of teams like Virginia, Georgia Tech, and Miami. Miami doesn't play any of those guys. They don't play Georgia Tech. They don't play Duke.
This is the second year in a row they've had this. Because remember, we got down to the wire
because there's
last
so many
year.
Teams.
There's so many teams, and they somehow all of the good teams never play one another. So at the very least, Duke will either be like really in that conversation or very much out of that conversation, because they're the only team that plays one of the opposite. They play UVA and Georgia Tech. So if they go unbeaten in that, then they'll definitely be in there. If they don't, then they will they will be out. You know, I don't know what exactly the tiebreakers are. I believe it then goes to, it's either points scored or common opponents.
I bet it's ranking. I bet it's college football playoff rankings.
I think that's a little bit further down because, you know, they have like 18 different legs of these. So I think they focus on some conference stuff first and then they get to the ranking. But at some point, like it literally becomes how many points did you score and how many points did you allow? So for some of these games, like for UVA, as we're talking about them, that game against North Carolina, who's been getting blown out by everybody that has a pulse, you're going to have to crush them. And, like, you're going to need some style points. Same thing with Wake Forest. Same thing with Virginia Tech. It would be in their best interest to really start running the score up, if necessary, against some of these lesser teams.
Yeah, Virginia can score. They can't stop anybody. But they also scored two defensive touchdowns against Louisville. So that was Louisville had a rough day and a rather unlucky day in that game on Saturday. All right, let's look ahead. Number one, Ohio State and Champaign to face 17th-ranked Illinois. They're a 14.5-point favorite. I think Ohio State's defense is legit, like maybe the best in the country. What do you think about them offensively? Do you think they're going to figure it out?
I think they will, and I don't think that Illinois can stop the wide receivers. The Ohio State is very much in the, hey, we got two guys on the outside that are probably better than just about everybody in the country. We dare you to stop them. If you stop one, we're going to throw to the other. If you try and stop both of them, well, we still have like a third guy or fourth guy that could come in and score, or our guy will use his legs. Like, there's just too much to go around. There's too much talent for Ohio State. And defensively,
is Tate the first round pick?
Yeah, I think he will be. I think he will be.
Jeremiah Smith will be the number one pick when he comes out in 27,
yeah.
Right?
Unless some like defensive end goes crazy over the next like 18 months, yeah, he'll be at the very least he's top four for sure, probably top two, because he is excellent. Tate is really good. It's a little bit of a lesser wide receiver class, at least as we sit here now coming out in 2026, but I think he'll be at the top of that. But defensively, they've allowed two touchdowns this entire year.
It's
insane. And it's like the second year in a row that it's been like this. You know, as much as Patricia gets flack in the NFL, most of which is deserved, this dude is basically a god amongst boys in college. I mean, these opposing quarterbacks have no idea what they're looking at when they go up against the Patricia defense. So, you know, best of luck to Luke Altmaier. He's done a really good job in terms of, you know, playing good football outside of that Indiana game. But if you're getting 60 hung on your head down by Indiana, I don't know that Ohio State's going to score 60 on you, but I don't think they're going to have a problem covering the 14.5.
All right. Alabama off the win over Vanderbilt, and this reeks to me. I think I will have Missouri as a smell test pick tomorrow. They're catching 3.5 in Columbia at home. They've got a running back, by the way, who is tearing it up right now through four or five games. His name's Ahmad Hardy. Does Missouri have a chance to beat Bama outright?
They do. Yeah, their quarterback is the guy that was at Penn State and decided to leave before the college football playoff started, just based off of the nature of where the transfer window was, and he kind of had to make that decision. But Bo Preble is a really, really good player. You know, sometimes I look at him and wonder if Penn State wishes they had him, but he's been really, really good. And, you know, Missouri is this weird SEC team because it always feels like they kind of fly under the radar. They're not nearly as sexy as like Alabama, Georgia, LSU, Texas A&M. But Drink has a program, man. I think that's going to be a fun one.
Pinkel was a really good coach before him.
He is. And, you know, he does some of the things that are like a little goofy on social media, but he kind of backs it up way more. Like he does some of the stuff that we made fun of Brian Kelly for doing with recruits. He does that as well. But then they outperform what most people think of them. I'll tell you what, if they beat Alabama, one, that puts Alabama in a really tough spot of getting to the college football playoff. But then Missouri really is going to jump the line in terms of the rankings. They're 14th now. I imagine if they beat Alabama, they're at least going to take their spot at 8.
This feels like one of the bigger games Missouri's had in a long, long time. And if you're a college football fan and you watch Missouri, when they're playing at home, it's like a weird camera angle. It's like you're right on the field.
Yeah.
It's a really weird way to watch a game. You're super close to the action. Whereas, by the way, when you're watching Maryland on TV, you're as far away The shot, wherever that main camera is about as far away as you can get. All right, two games that really are going to highlight Saturday, both at 3:30. The Red River Rivalry Shootout, Oklahoma and Texas. Texas has really struggled this year. Mateer might be back Saturday for Oklahoma, and Texas is favored in this game by a point and a half.
Are they still favored at most books? Because I know that number
has been... I saw it fall to
been...
a pick at one point. I'll look at it real quickly. They were favored by 1.5 last night. But maybe with Mateer's possibility, maybe it shifted.
Yeah, I think it's... Well, so it's... I still see it at 1.5 at one of the books that I use. But at another book, it's 1.5 the other way. So shop around, people. That's word of advice.
Well, you got to be careful now because Oklahoma may get its starting quarterback back for this game.
I think they're bluffing, to be honest. I don't think that he is. I don't think that he's going to be ready. I think this is just the nature of the rivalry. Rivalry is still very much alive in college football. I would be stunned if Mateer plays, and if he does, I think it's going to be much more of him and his legs versus him and his arms. They said something like they're going to see on Friday how he grips the football. And I'm like, if you can't grip the football already, I don't know how much is going to change in 2 or 3 days. I'm not a doctor, but I don't know how much is going to change in 2 or 3 days.
All right, let's assume he doesn't play.
Okay,
how does this game shake out? Oklahoma's pretty good defensively. They've proven that this year.
They have. They're pretty good defensively. The best bet if Mateer doesn't play is the under. It's a very short number. It's like 42.5, 43.5. But both defenses are super, super sharp. Oklahoma, I think, is one of the best defenses in the country. So the under would be the play. But that line, if Mateer does not play, it does feel like Texas would be the go-to there.
All right. Indiana, 7th-ranked team in America with a quarterback by the name of Fernando Mendoza. Know the name. He's a top 10 projected pick now. And the only quarterback that he is now behind is the quarterback he'll be facing in terms of the mock drafts for 2026, and that is Oregon quarterback Dante Moore. How do you see this game playing out in Eugene?
This is going to be a track meet. I think both offenses are really, really good. I think playing at Oregon is a very sneaky, great environment to play in. Like, it's going to be loud. There's going to be a lot of people there. So I think this is going to be awesome. Indiana is good enough to hang with Oregon. Like, they very much are. What you saw against Illinois was not a fluke. This is a legitimately good football team. It's not Indiana of last year where it's just everyone's kind of happy to see them here because we want new blood. Cignetti's done a really good job using that year and then building off of the momentum. This team is legit, but I just love Oregon. Oregon has been one of my favorite teams this entire year because of Dante Moore. And I think Dan Lanning is so good in late game scenarios. So I like Oregon. I don't like them to lay the 7.5. So I kind of like Indiana with the points, but I do think Oregon's going to win.
I really wish one of these two games was at night. I'll give you just a sneaky one on Saturday night. I think Auburn's got a shot against Georgia at Jordan-Hare.
I do too.
That line's really short.
The lines are really short, and Hugh Freeze needs a big win this year. He was brought to Auburn to be a guy that beats the big, big, bad SEC teams. Georgia is a little bit more limited this year than they've been in years past. That's a sneaky one. And then USC-Michigan is a little sneaky. USC's laying 2.5 at home.
Yeah, I think that's right, though. What do you think the number should be?
I thought it would be a little bit closer to a pick'em. I think immediately people will see that. I don't disagree with the number, but I think the people will see that 15th-ranked Michigan is the underdog, and the public is going to flock to Michigan.
Maeva is now a projected first-round pick. Have you seen that, the USC quarterback?
I haven't looked at a mock draft lately. I'd be curious to see how many quarterbacks they have in there and then how many quarterbacks are actually projected first.
Well,
all the
quarterbacks in there now are completely different than the quarterbacks that were in there 4 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago before the season started, which tells you a lot about college football this year. A lot of unexpected. Last question for you. Does Notre Dame have a chance to make the playoff?
Yeah, they do. As much as I want them in a conference. They're not going to get in a conference. There's no benefit to them to getting in a conference. They do have a shot, though. I think that Penn State loss helped them a little bit because, anytime you get more good teams with two losses, that kind of opens the door a little bit for other good teams with two losses. So I do think there's an opportunity. They, though, I would say they need USC this weekend. They need as many ranked opponents on their schedule to close, and they have USC next week. So if USC wins, that'll drastically help them. And then, as crazy as it sounds, there is still some sort of potential, maybe, just maybe, that Navy is ranked in November, and that would help them as well. They need a couple of quality wins.
Their running back tandem of Love and Price, it's the best.
So Jeremiah Love is probably my favorite.
Say that again.
Jeremiah Love is probably my favorite running back in college football right now.
He's so good, and I think their team is good. I mean, they have a 3-point loss on opening weekend to Miami, and a 41-40 crazy loss in South Bend to Texas A&M when they botched the extra point, hold late in the game.
Right.
I could easily see them running the table and winning every. I mean, they're a 24-point favorite over NC State on Saturday. All right. I'll talk to you. I'm sure we'll be texting over the weekend. I'll talk to you next week.
Yep. Yes.
At the Denton Day, everybody on X on Twitter. He'll be back Monday, with Linnell and everybody to host the pre and post game shows right here on the Team 980 and 106.7 The Fan. Charch, Paul Charchi and Fantasy Football Talk next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I know there's one person listening to this rejoin song who knows what it is. I love looking at Charch's Twitter before he comes on. Always gives me topics to talk to him about that are not fantasy football related. You know, I've admitted this to you before. I'm not a fantasy football guy. I bet football, and I've had, certainly degenerate portions of my life being a bettor. Of football. Yeah. And fantasy's always been like, a couple of beers, where betting's more like heroin. It's more like the real thing. By the way, not that I would advocate that, and I've never used that, would I. I would never go to the beast, as it's referred to. Charch and I have a lot of similar interests. I saw you tweet out the top three Joy Division songs. I'm going to tell you right now, I didn't even know Joy Division until maybe 10 years ago. And my middle son, who's a musician's like, you're so into The Cure. How did you never get into Joy Division? And then I did. And the rest is history. They're brilliant. That whole, that whole genre from the 70s and 80s, Cure, Smiths, Joy Division. Incredible, right?
Yes, I think absolutely incredible. That new wave artistry that came through, Depeche Mode, English Beat,
English
the Cure
Beat.
You mentioned.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Beat.
New Order. It's just amazing. And the Joy Division story is particularly fascinating. It's been made into two different movies, one of them extremely good, called 24 Hour Party People. It is a fantastic story that is largely around Joy Division, but also New Order and the Happy Mondays. And it's about the Manchester music scene of the late 70s and into the 80s. that started all of these bands. And it's a half comedy, half documentary, where the main person that's on screen, Steve Coogan, who's a great actor, he will talk to the camera a lot and tell you about things that are going to happen. It's like he already knows how this thing's going to play out with these bands. So he'll tell you things that are happening in the movie while they're happening, what's going to happen. One of the key things about Joy Division to know is this. So Joy Division is built around their lead singer, who is just, he's really, really special. And has got just an amazing voice. His name's Ian Curtis. And he would go on to unfortunately kill himself after three records, Joy Division records.
He was very young, really young.
Very young, 23 years old when he killed himself. And they had just hit, they were just like getting all this steam. Love Will Tear Us Apart, the song you just played, had just been released. And I mean, things were really going well for this band. He kills himself. And by every measure, it should be over for Joy Division. But instead, the remaining three members of the band added a woman in and renamed themselves New Order, totally changed their sound. They became electronified, and they became one of the biggest new age bands in the world, playing 100,000 seat, venues. Unbelievable that, that New Order came out of this, because, normally when you lose, the signature player dies and you're trying to go on with your bass player and your drummer and your rhythm guitarist. It's over, but not here. They formed New Order and went on.
Interesting. Interesting. I also saw you tweet, Christopher Nolan movies. I'm curious, have you seen the new PTA movie yet, the DiCaprio movie?
No, I have not.
Aren't you interested in seeing it?
Yeah.
Are you a Paul Thomas Anderson fan as much as you're a Chris Nolan fan?
Well, no, not as much as I am as Chris Nolan fan. I mean, because that's a high, high bar. I mean, to me, Christopher Nolan is a modern day Hitchcock. I think what he has done for movies is what Hitchcock did in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and 60s. Nolan is doing now, raising the bar for the kinds of movies that can reach pop culture, a pop culture audience, and still be thoughtful and challenging and provoking. And Hitchcock did it first, and I believe that Christopher Nolan has done it since then in a magnificent way. Paul Thomas Anderson is outstanding. Boogie Nights, to me, is just a masterpiece. It's so good.
I think there Will Be Blood is an all-timer. But Tommy, my longtime partner, said the best Paul Thomas Anderson movie is Hard Eight, which I've never seen. It came out in the early 90s. I think, and it's a gambling movie, but look, I'm going to tell you right now, I didn't love Oppenheimer. I didn't think it was as well done as everybody else did. I actually thought it was hard to follow, and I was familiar with a lot of the details of that. Now, I loved Inception. I loved The Dark Knight. I thought Dunkirk. I heard a lot of people, not like Dunkirk. I thought it was so well done.
Great.
He's great, but I didn't love Oppenheimer, and I've only seen it once, and I'm wondering if that's a movie you've got to see, another time or two before you fall in love with it.
No, it's not. Oppenheimer is as straightforward as any movie that he's done. It's among the least challenging movies, and I think that was part of what made it very popular, and it plays out like a documentary. This is not like The Prestige or Inception, where you get done and you go, oh my God, what did I just watch? Yeah. I've got to go watch, what I know now, I have to go watch it again. To me, Oppenheimer is a one-watch movie. I thought it was good. I would not put it in the top half of Christopher Nolan's filmography.
Do you think that, I kind of feel like Tarantino movies, that's probably for pop culture. I think Tarantino movies are the ones that people love to rank more than any, even more than Nolan movies, even more than Paul Thomas Anderson movies. And I also think that Tarantino movies, pretty much all of them, are movies that just keep getting better every time you watch them. Agree or disagree?
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, this, because the effort that goes into building fascinating characters, the byplay, the acting that he gets out of people. I mean, you know, you feel like if you need to find the best acting any actor has ever done, well, you might want to start
Waltz.
And find out if they've been in a Quentin Tarantino movie, because it's probably there. You know, he has launched and relaunched so many great careers and done so many great things with characters and actors. You know, if you want to see Brad Pitt be as good as anything he's ever been in, watch Inglourious Basterds as an example. And that's Brad Pitt.
Nobody knew Christopher Waltz. Travolta was done. Talk about, you know, reemergence of somebody. Yeah, the list goes on and on. But yeah, no, but Inglourious Basterds, Pitt's performance is just incredible. I think actually that is my number one of all time. And it was a movie that I loved to begin with, but now to me is an all-time classic. And I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is the same thing. You've got to watch it two or three times to really fall in love with it.
I'm with you on that. Inglourious Basterds is probably number one for me, but Pulp Fiction has got a special place, right?
Of course.
Pulp Fiction came out, you know, almost nobody knew who Quentin Tarantino was, and you mentioned Travolta dead. Nobody knew.
Well,
Samuel
Reservoir Dogs. If you were a fan of Reservoir Dogs, you were waiting for that next release from him, because I do remember the anticipation for Pulp Fiction because Reservoir Dogs was so good.
Right, but I think that never hit any kind of mainstream.
Probably not.
Reservoir Dogs. It was a movie buff's movie at the time it came out. And Pulp Fiction, I mean, just it didn't just move the needle. It lifted the needle off the record, advanced it three songs, dropped the needle back down, and completely changed what was deemed to be sort of an acceptable level of violence, I don't know, sexual nature, you know, gratuity. It was, I mean, it just rewrote everything of what you thought you could get away with in a movie. And it remains, I mean, I don't think you can tell the story of the history of cinema without Pulp Fiction in it.
All right. Well, let's talk about your father's watch and discuss some fantasy football tonight. Because, you know, your father went through a lot to get that watch to you, young man, young lad.
That's right.
What do we got tonight? Do we have a Philadelphia team that's going to look different offensively or not?
Well, it hasn't been good to this point offensively. Saquon Barkley, let's start there. Here, I'm going to give you some Saquon Barkley stats, some metrics that will shock you and your listeners. He has not topped 88 rushing yards in any game. He's averaging 53 rushing yards per game. And here's some advanced metrics for you. In broken tackle rate among starting running backs, so just we're limiting the pool here to starting running backs, Saquon Barkley, third to last in broken tackle rate. He's fourth from last in yards per carry. He's at 3.2 yards per carry. He is third from last in yards after contact. I mean, this is not the same Saquon Barkley we saw last year. Last year, he had 8 games of over 40 yards. And here we are 5 weeks into the season. He's got 1 game of over 40 yards on a reception. Saquon probably will not have star guard Landon Dickerson tonight. So that doesn't help either. Now, fortunately, the Giants run defense is garbage. So, you know, we're still starting him, and this could be the breakout game. But
the Giants are not garbage defensively. I don't know what the numbers say, but they have talent on defense. I've watched them now 3 games. They're nasty on defense. They gave up that game Sunday because of 5 turnovers by their offense.
Yeah, and otherwise would have likely won the game. They are good against the pass, where they get the great pass rush from the great defensive line that they've had in place for years now, right? Dexter Lawrence and Brent Burns.
That addition in Burns playing at maybe the best level of his career, it seems like.
Yes. But where you attack the Giants is on the ground. They're giving up 5.5 yards per carry. That's second worst in the league. They rank 31st in defensive run rate success, and they rank 25th in yards before contact, which really tells you a lot about how good your run defense is yards before contact. They're 25th there. So the path to victory for the Eagles is on the ground and getting Saquon Barkley going tonight.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's interesting to me that they're that low. I haven't looked at it. I've just, in watching them, they play hard. They play fast. Their pass rush is relentless. Mm-hmm. They just haven't had the ability to score enough on offense. And the turnovers in New Orleans killed them. I actually like the Giants tonight. I think they're going to have a I think Philadelphia is in a bit of free fall right now. Not for the season, but just here in the short term. And midterm, and those numbers on Saquon are just unbelievable. All right, so I was having this conversation with a friend of mine. He actually is a fan of Flacco from Baltimore days, like I am. Joe Flacco was never an elite quarterback. I'm not saying that. Joe Flacco was, however, a big time clutch quarterback in their biggest games when he was in Baltimore. But the big difference between Flacco and Jake Browning is that Browning played scared. Flacco's never been afraid of anything in his entire life. The ball is going up for grabs, and T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase are going to get opportunities even with that bad offensive line. So is it possible that you end up getting better fantasy numbers from Cincinnati even in losses that are upcoming?
Yeah, it almost can't get worse than it was with Jake Browning, who had looked functional when we had seen him 2 years ago when he had to play a long stretch of games. The real problem that's killing him is, by any measure, the Bengals' offensive line is the league's worst. It is a total disaster. They're dead last in pass block win rate. They're 32nd in Pro Football Focus's pass block ratings. That is what is making it extremely hard for anybody to have success. And here comes Joe Flacco. What has hurt Flacco this year, and why I think the Browns ultimately decided to release him, he was throwing at the league's shortest distance downfield, barely 5 yards. I mean, you just can't cobble together a meaningful offense. 5 yard passes at a time just doesn't cut it. We need to be at closer to 10 yards. I mean, and what worries me now is he's walking into a worse offensive line that's going to give him even less time to throw. And that Flacco is just, it's just going to be all dump-off stuff again. You know, you look at the Browns' two tight ends, David Njoku and Harold Fannin, they were crushing because they were catching 5 yard passes.
Oh, Fanning's good.
Right up the line of scrimmage.
He's a rookie tight end he might be the best tight end of this rookie class with Loveland and with Warren. I mean, Warren's playing great, but Fanning's a talent. I don't know if you've seen him at all, and I don't know what the numbers are on him, but he looks good to me.
He looks good, and unlike Warren, he's doing it sharing time with Njoku. And, you know, they work a little differently. Njoku's usually in line. Fannin's usually standing in the slot. But still, that's, you know, what Fannin has done is pretty remarkable. And anybody who just discarded him because he went to Wake Forest or Bowling Green, you know, shame on you. Now, interesting that this trade happened in the division to get Joe Flacco. Because a little bit like the Jahan Dotson trade that was in division, you don't trade within your division if it's going to come back and haunt you and make you look like an idiot when this player comes back and knocks you out of the playoffs and gives you losses. The Browns have to feel pretty confident that Joe Flacco is cooked, or I don't think they would have sent him to a division.
Well, I think they've also settled in on we're in major rebuild mode now. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't know. Yes. You might be right. Look, I mean, I doubt they're fearful of Flacco going to Cincinnati and lighting it up and keeping Cincinnati in the race, but Cleveland's not going to be in the race, I don't think, at this point.
So, but I mean, here's the thing. Here's why, if I'm Andrew Berry, the GM for Cleveland, and Kevin Stefanski, who I love, I'm not ready to give up quite yet, because I have arguably the NFL's best defense, and I'm playing almost everybody close. If I can just get functional quarterbacking, then, you know, all of a sudden, you know, every game can be a win. And I don't know that Dillon Gabriel's the answer there, or that the answer is even on roster. And that's a different issue. By the way, since they let Baker Mayfield go, which was only 2.5 seasons ago, here's who the Cleveland Browns have started at quarterback: Jacoby Brissett, PJ Walker, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, Jeff Driscoll, Joe Flacco, Deshaun Watson, Jameis Winston, Dorian Thompson-Robinson again, Joe Flacco again, Bailey Zappe, and as of last week, Dillon Gabriel. All that in 2.5 seasons since they decided Baker Mayfield was not the quarterback of the future.
Do you think, though, I think we talked about this last week, you know, the quarterbacks and the resurrection of so many of these quarterbacks, the game that Darnold and Baker Mayfield participated in last week
and
is just, you know, it was an epic football game for quarterback play. Baker Mayfield was never going to become what Baker Mayfield is now in Cleveland. He needed the brief moment with Sean McVay, the Liam Cohen. He needed the change of scenery. It's just like guys that were here for 20 years during the Snyder era. You never forgave them for, you know, like, look at the coaches, you know, the McVays, the O'Connells, Kyle Shanahans, all the coaches that were here. You don't forgive them for not having it work out here because you knew how bad the organization was. Same thing with Cleveland. He was never going to be great in Cleveland, was he?
Probably, you're right, that he probably needed to hit the reset button somewhere else. The only reason I believe it could have ultimately worked out in Cleveland is, exactly, you have a two-time Coach of the Year winner in Stefanski. I still believe, despite all the futility that they've had there, Stefanski, to me, is still one of the 10 best coaches in the NFL, and he might have been able to turn it around.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about our team. How do you like Bill Kroski Merritt?
Well, you called it last week, and I've been waiting.
Did I call it? You said you texted me and said I called it. I said that if they end up going in one direction, it would be him. I think I did say that. But anyway, obviously this kid's got some talent, and he is now becoming a fantasy darling, I'm assuming.
Yes, he is. He's the big mover for this week. You didn't call it by game. You didn't say it's going to happen this week, but you did say that Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt is ultimately going to separate himself, and he did. He got double the snaps, double the carries as anyone else, and he looked good doing it, and he got the team's only goal line carry, and now he faces the Bears Monday night. Last we saw the Bears before they went on bye last week, they had just given up 200 rushing yards to the Raiders.
Right.
So, last year, Chicago allowed the most fantasy points in the league. This year, Chicago's improved all the way to the fourth most fantasy points allowed to opposing runners. So, it is green light for Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt. Don't have my rankings in front of me for this week, but I think he's sitting somewhere around running back 15 for this week. So, I'm dusting him off for sure. Noah Brown comes back. So that'll be nice, and that will mean you can get Noah Brown running on the right side of the field, which he always does. And I know you probably know this. Your team is very unique in that your receivers run like 90% of the routes from one side of the field or other. McLaurin on the left, Noah Brown on the right. McLaurin not going to go, correct?
Yeah, I don't think so. We'll know more today, but I mean, it's a long way till Monday night. I guess there's a chance, but I don't think it's a good one.
Chris Moore
Noah Brown practiced yesterday, so we'll see. I mean, Luke McCaffrey certainly played and has picked it up a little bit, and I think they're a little bit happier with him now. Yeah, you know, back to Kroski Merritt for a moment.
Yeah.
Look, if the matchup is a perfect one, and you already, you know, explained it, the Bears currently the 31st ranked rush defense, Washington number one in the league in rush offense. Rico Dowdle had 206 yards last week, and yeah. he's going against a bad defensive football team in Dallas. I would think he's Correct. Way up there on the running back list this week.
Yeah, he is. We call him the Dowdler. I don't know what it means, but it sounds vaguely dirty, so we like to call him the Dowdler. Went berserk last week, 206
yards.
Sounds
illegal.
Yeah, it might be illegal, too. That's right. Yeah, well, putting up 206 rushing yards for Rico Dowdle probably is illegal. Miami was that opponent, and somehow he actually goes to an easier defense this week in Dallas. Yeah. Four out of five opposing backfields have had big days against Dallas, including last week, Breece Hall, 155 yards. Cowboys ranked dead last in run defense success rate. So, yeah, Rico Dowdle, automatic start this week, which you did not think you'd end up saying, but Chuba Hubbard not expected to play again. So, yeah.
You know, Charge, the Bill Kroski Merritt won the FedEx Ground Award award this week. Second time he's won it this year. He won it in week one, too. I think that they literally didn't know that Rico Dowdle, because he plays for the Panthers in a game against the Dolphins, rushed for a season-high 206 yards. I don't know how he did not win that award.
Right.
It was 9 yards a carry. It's not like they gave it to him 40 times.
No.
Pretty impressive performance. All right, what else do we need to know about the weekend?
Well, a couple things here. I think we could. I think if there's a player to avoid that you would normally start, I think it's Justin Fields, the Jets quarterback.
Yeah.
He faces his toughest challenge of the year this week, but he's been really good. He's played three full games. He got knocked out of one and he missed one. In those three full games, Justin Fields, fantasy quarterback 2, fantasy quarterback 4, and fantasy quarterback 7. I mean, that is like
terrible.
Josh Allen level stuff. And he's not a good passer, right? But
he's terrible. I thought he was. I mean, he got all of that late, right, in the game on Sunday.
A lot of it was garbage time, for sure.
Yeah.
Here's Denver. Get this. This season, whole season, Denver's allowed 15 quarterback rushing yards on the year, and they have faced Daniel Jones and Jalen Hurts. Jones had 2 rushing yards. Hurts had 3. So if you're going to take the wheels off of Justin Fields and have to rely on his passing against the Broncos, That's a scenario where Justin Fields could be sitting on a very bad game. And frankly, the offense looks better with Tyrod Taylor. And there's a non-zero chance that if the Jets are looking at their 6th consecutive loss to open a season, that Justin Fields gets yanked from this game.
Yeah, I mean, I watched the first half. Justin Fields, I always thought there was a chance for him. He just doesn't see it as a passer. I mean, he holds he takes some of the ugliest sacks after holding the ball of anybody, but he certainly produces fantasy wise late in games in which they're getting blown out, and maybe he'll do it again Sunday in London. Don't you love early Sunday morning football? It's the best. I don't even care what the matchup is, as long as it's on. Charge.
The Vikings Browns last week set the all time Europe TV record for viewership.
Really?
It
was a good football game.
In the U.S. I didn't say it very clearly there, but for all of the European games that there's been, that game was the most watched game in the U.S. So apparently people love getting out of bed early, and I had to do the pregame show at 5:45 in the morning, but people love
it. Well, it was a good game, too. And I thought Dylan Gabriel actually looked legitimate, and he's just small. That's his problem. All right, I got to run. Thanks, as always.
Okay, thanks, my man. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
At Paul Charchian on X on Twitter for all of your fantasy information. You're going to hear what Steve Suter said about Jaden Daniels on Sunday next.
Alrighty, happy Thursday, everybody. We start off with the Browns. They're going into full fire sale mode after trading Greg Newsome to the Jaguars last night, moving to playoff baseball. The Tigers forced a game 5 versus the Seattle Mariners by a score of 9-3. The Chicago Cubs, they held off the Milwaukee Brewers by a score of 4-3 to cut their series lead in half. The Toronto Blue Jays eliminate the New York Yankees from postseason contention in a 5-2 victory. And the Philadelphia Phillies lit up the Dodgers by a score of 8-2 to stave off elimination. To hockey last night, the Caps, they fall to the Bruins in their season opener, 3-1. A tight game where the Caps had the upper hand early, but unable to capitalize on power plays and scoring chances. Bruins score first. Caps finally get one back on the power play, and then moments later, the Bruins retake the lead, and that was all she wrote. Empty netter makes it 3-1. Caps fall to the Bruins. Tonight, we have an NFC East matchup on tap for Thursday Night Football. The Eagles making the bus ride to East Rutherford to take on the New York Giants. Kickoff at 8:15. Pregame starts right here on the Team 980 at 8 p.m. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1, and you can catch Den's office throughout all of football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.